We have with us on the line right now, Michael Carroll, Michael Christopher Carroll. We're going to be talking about a fascinating book, Lab 257, The Disturbing Story of the Government's Secret Plum Island Germ Laboratory. Mr. Carroll, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Doctor.
Well, of course, you've done a lot of work on this, on the subject of Plum Island. Why don't you tell our listeners how you got interested in Plum Island? Because I think it's a fascinating story, and I think as you get into Operation Paperclip, the Nazi scientists, these macabre experiments, why most people would never imagine that there could be people in our government that would work with the Nazis to create new diseases for mass killing, and maybe even some of them have been unleashed on the American people. Why don't you pick up the story?
Sure. Well, basically, it's been about a seven-year process. I got interested in Plum Island growing up in the New York area and spending some time out in the, you know, the exclusive Hamptons. And really, out there was where I heard a lot of things about this place. It's, you know, it's a secret island. As your listeners know, it's in the shadow of New York City on the doorstep of the largest population center in the United States. They do secret research there. The Department of Homeland Security on some of the most dangerous viruses and bacteria known to humankind.
And, of course, isn't it right across the channel from a place called Lyme, Connecticut?
Sure, and there's some real links to Lyme disease. And they do all this work, Doctor, in an environment with no security. It's been targeted by a terrorist with ties to Osama bin Laden, and they basically run this laboratory no better than your junior high school biology lab.
And, of course, really the tragedy is that people have gotten this disease. It's spread across America. And, of course, they always have this plausible denial. Well, gee, we don't know anything. And you look in the files and why they're all empty. It really is rather disturbing. Aren't they supposed to keep those government files, especially on the Nazi scientists we brought into America after World War II?
Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, that's sort of one of the big projects of Plum Island was the obliteration of many of the historical documents. And luckily, through my research, I spent over 100 hours with scientists and workers and in the depths of the National Archives and Records Administration in Washington. It paints an amazing picture. I mean, like you say, I mean, one of the things they always kept quiet was this place, this germ warfare island, was hatched by Nazi Germany's top biological warfare scientist that the U.S. government smuggled into the United States after World War II. He worked directly for Heinrich Himmler. Really amazing stuff.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about the Operation Paperclip. For those who don't know what this Operation Paperclip was, because it's so important for, I believe, so many of the diseases now, new diseases that we have in America that we never saw before, and they say, oh, shucks, they've always been here, we just didn't recognize them, and that just isn't true. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here and bring some other stations on board. So we'll be back in just a moment with Michael Christopher Carroll talking about his book, Lab 257. It's the story of Plum Island. And if you read my newsletter about a year and a half ago when we went into all the new diseases that are striking the world, why Plum Island plays a very, very important part in that story. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, Michael Christopher Carroll, his book, Lab 257, The Disturbing Story of the Government's Secret Plum Island Germ Laboratory. And Michael has done an amazing job of getting this book, putting together the information that nobody else has. Everybody's suspected about the secret things that have been going on there, but I think that one of the most difficult thing for most people to recognize is that there really are evil people in the world, and evil people do evil things, and then other people cover for them. We were talking about, of course, Operation Paperclip, and the fact that the government brought a chief Nazi germ scientist into the United States after the Second World War, who'd worked under the direct supervision of Heinrich Himmler, and, of course, he was never punished for his crimes. In fact, he was very well rewarded. Would you like to tell that story?
Sure, I'd be glad to. You know, it's a very fascinating story. The guy's name is Dr. Eric Traub. You know, he worked directly for the number two man in the Nazi regime, Heinrich Himmler, as you say, the Reichsführer of the SS division. His job was to run the germ warfare program for Nazi Germany, and he basically begin to see the similarities here with your listeners. He had his own top secret germ warfare island just off the coast of Germany in the Baltic called Insel Rhein. He ran this island during World War II. They did all kinds of testing, and then they took the germs that they created for warfare use. They actually tested them. Then they called it the Eastern Front, which was, of course, occupied Russia. They did all kinds of open-air testing and dropping beetles from airplanes and such. And what's most interesting is after the war, the Soviets captured him because this Insel Reims Island was in eastern Germany. They put him to work under gunpoint doing germ warfare work for them. And then he was able to make a daring escape with his family into West Berlin in 1949. And then the U.S. government, along, as you say, as part of this Project Paperclip, imported him along with a 2,000 other Nazi scientists to basically use them for their talent, you know, against the emerging Cold War. And one of the strangest parts about this is the fact that him, like many other of these scientists, completely escaped the Nuremberg trial and denazification courts, and we only know a fraction of the terrible things that they did when they were fighting us in England and France and so on.
Well, of course, even more frightening is the realization that the OSS and the CIA helped many of the major Nazi war criminals. I'm talking about Michael Bormann. I'm talking about Joseph Mengele, Klaus Barbie, the others that escaped to South America, with the full help and support of the American CIA. That, of course, is the question story you never get out. It's covered in, of course, the Medusa File or Linda Hutt's wonderful book. It's entitled The Secret Agenda.
Yeah, and you know it's interesting.
Hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. With us, of course, is Michael Christopher Carroll. We've just been talking a little bit about the Operation Paperclip. And not only did the CIA and the military bring 2,000 scientists to the United States, Nazi scientists, many of them, and let them work in our space program. Werner von Braun had been part of the SS. They worked in psychological warfare and came up with some of these terrible programs aimed at brainwashing and mind control. And then they worked with creating new diseases. Some of these, as they actually worked on when they were in Germany, they brought this over here, methods of killing mass numbers of people. And, of course, the average American has never heard of Operation Paperclip or the fact that we actually helped many of these people to escape to South America, Klaus Barbie, Eichmann, Joseph Mengele, Martin Bormann. They were all helped by the CIA. And you have to ask yourself, why would they have done something that stupid unintentionally? And that's covered in the book, The Secret Agenda by Linda Hunt, a book we carry called The Medusa File, and, of course, Operation Bluebird by Dr. Colin Ross. So those two books, the latter two, are available through Radio Liberty. Pick up the story there, please, Michael, and tell us more about Plum Island.
Sure. Well, this man, Trow, basically... the Navy and the CIA and the Army germ warfare scientists at Fort Detrick. They brought the man Traub over here in the late 40s, and he had a very simple idea. You know, he said, you know, you guys here in America don't have a offshore germ warfare island laboratory, so we should establish one here in the U.S. that ultimately became the Plum Island Laboratory, a fact that, you know, like you say, many in our government don't really want to know about, but we found that detail in the depths of the National Archives, and it's, again, all in my book, and it's very, very fascinating. And really, the whole progress of this place, Plum Island, really went from bad to worse. I mean, there's been multiple germ outbreaks. There's been workers that have gotten sick. Again, there's terrible security and an environment. I mean, here they have, you can imagine, germs like the Rift Valley fever virus. This thing is the first cousin of the Ebola virus, and they have it there under haphazard conditions, and they have absolutely no security. In the 1950s, there used to be 34 armed guards with machine guns patrolling this place. Today, it's nothing but two private security over-the-hill policemen, with all due respect to them, from a private security guard. And we know the place has been targeted by a terrorist with ties to Osama bin Laden, who had a file on Plum Island in Kabul, Afghanistan. Amazing.
And, of course, you have to ask yourself, why would our leaders do anything that stupid unintentionally? So let's get back into this whole thing of Lyme disease and the relationship between, of course, this disease that broke out just across the channel a couple of miles away in a place called Lyme, Connecticut, and then, of course, the experiments that were done on Plum Island with all sorts of ticks. So why don't you pick up that story? Because they keep denying this, and they ridicule anybody who talks about it, why they put them into the same category as the people who believe in black helicopters or, you know, five-legged cattle. And, you know, I thought that you brought out so well how they ridicule anybody who questions government programs.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things they love to say. Like they said to me, it sounds like science fiction. But let me tell you, Doctor, this stuff is so true and so factual, you can't make it up. I mean, let's take a look. Lyme disease, I mean, you know, every investigation is about connecting the dots. And what we have here is an incident in 1970. You have a Plum Island, an exotic germ laboratory where they were breeding hundreds and thousands of hard and soft ticks, it's all in the documents, in an environment that the chief engineer of Plum Island wrote a document that said the lab had 3/4-inch holes in its roof. And when they were doing smoke tests for the incinerator room where they burned up the ticks and the diseased animals, there was hundreds of cubic feet there a minute escaping. Really fascinating, fascinating stuff. And, you know, again, right across the Long Island Sound, where hundreds of thousands of birds go along the North American highway, is Old Lyme, Connecticut. And I may not be a scientist, but when you take a look at that and an outbreak of this thing called Dutch duck plague virus that was never before in the Western Hemisphere, it, like Lyme disease, showed up on the doorstep of Plum Island in 1966. And then the idea of what happened with West Nile virus and the fact that horses were dying again on the doorstep of Plum Island, just pounds away, weeks before the first humans came down with West Nile virus in New York City in 1999, it certainly raises the question that someone in our scientific community needs to take a look at Plum Island as the possible culprit.
Well, of course, the CIA said it was Saddam Hussein. That was what they were saying at the time it broke out. Oh, it's all Saddam Hussein's fault.
I mean, that's certainly one of the theories, is that West Nile virus was introduced that way. It's certainly possible, but when you take a look at Lyme disease, West Nile virus, this Dutch duck plague virus, I mean, my book lays it out, you know, very, very clearly in terms of how could you have, I mean, think about this. They call me crazy, but here I, in three different decades, you have three germ outbreaks for viruses and bacteria that have never before been seen in the Western Hemisphere. They appear within miles of a laboratory that's been demonstrably faulty by the documents, by its own chief engineer with holes in its roof. And these diseases spread far and wide across America, and you know, take the magnifying glass and turn it upon themselves in this, when it comes to this laboratory. It's really shocking.
Well, you know, the thing that really disturbs me so very, very much is the fact that they were actually working with ticks there and introducing diseases in them just before why we had the first outbreaks of Lyme disease back in 1975. Well, you want to develop that because you've done a lot of work there, and they've done everything to play that down. Why would they be infecting ticks with bizarre diseases?
Yeah, well, what they were doing there was they were doing work on a disease called African swine fever. Now, I often get the question, what does that have to do with Lyme disease? And the answer is absolutely nothing. But what they were doing is they were doing research on hard and soft ticks, including a hard tick called the Lone Star tick, as your listeners probably know, along with the deer tick. The Lone Star tick is a prime culprit in the spread and transmission of Lyme disease. Well, when they go over to the far reaches of Africa, Doctor, they go to Indonesia, the South Pacific, or you know, the Amazon, to pick up these samples that they test at Plum Island, where you have diseases that can't be found elsewhere in the United States. It can only be studied on this secret island. They don't go get purified African swine fever virus. They take blood samples. I mean, you know, the tissue samples or samples of certain white blood cells or certain blood or certain serum samples. So this stuff is cross-contaminated with a whole host of things. So it's certainly likely to believe that Borrelia, the Lyme disease bacteria, was part of some of the things that they might have brought over there. And here they are researching in a basically a laboratory that is porous. This thing was supposed to be sealed to the outside world forever, and it had 3/4-inch holes in its roof. It was about as effective as containing germs or ticks from escaping as a piece of Swiss cheese, to be honest.
Well, of course, it sounds, from reading your book, as if they were infecting animals, and then they were leaving those animals right out there in the open, where, and of course, they were, you know, actually having, was it contaminated food, or what was it that they were so concerned about the birds carrying?
Yeah, probably they were worried about mosquitoes infecting birds that could transmit diseases. Like, for example, as you say, they did some testing outdoors that they were never supposed to do. The testing was on a vaccine, a killed virus, for the Rift Valley fever virus. Now, it's amazing. Like, you know, you mentioned the smoke screens that they like to use. They like to basically belittle people that say things bad about this Plum Island Laboratory. And I can tell you, one of the things they say is they say, well, Plum Island, we only do animal disease work here. Well, let me tell you, as we all know, it took the West Nile virus deaths and the deaths in the anthrax attacks for us to all realize that animal diseases, which those two things are, can kill humans too. This Rift Valley fever virus killed over 800 people in the late 70s in Egypt after a massive outbreak. It has the same type of symptoms as the Ebola virus. You basically bleed to death 24 to 48 hours. And they were testing this stuff in the largest population center of the United States, outdoors with animals, and they were never supposed to do it. Very dangerous stuff.
And of course, the thing that always bothered me was that Ebola didn't really exist anywhere in the world, before those initial outbreaks in Africa. And of course, they were entirely different strains, and they weren't, at least at that time, existing in the animals. So where did they come from? And we know that some places they were doing experiments to create new diseases. They were learning how to make animal diseases infect human beings. This is the frightening thing. And they were finding out how you could get animal diseases to infect humans before we had a barrier that protected us from animal diseases. But it doesn't seem like that exists much anymore, does it?
No, you're absolutely right. It's fascinating that you raise this, because let's take just this Rift Valley fever virus. It was known as a cattle disease, an animal disease, as you say, and it was not known for infecting humans. I mean, humans could catch it, but what they caught was sort of a mild febrile illness or a mild flu or a fever. Now, what happened after this Egypt outbreak in the late 70s, early 80s, and there still remains a lot of speculation as to whether there was the Soviet germ warfare people working on it, guys like Ken Allebeck, who wrote the book Biohazard, and now, you know, this guy does all consulting for Pentagon contracts now and sits in a beautiful house in Northern Virginia. Meanwhile, he was working on genetically resistant to bacteria anthrax that basically was, you know, resistant to all types of antibiotics. Well, there's also possibilities, because this Rift Valley fever virus jumped, like you say, from the barrier. It became this cattle disease that then started to kill people like the Ebola virus did. Very similar.
Well, we have a lot of serious questions about what has really been going on in some of the scientific labs. And you've raised a question about what's been going on in Lab 257 on Plum Island. Has anybody in Congress ever dared to investigate this?
Well, it has been. I mean, unfortunately, I have to report that the results have been what I call, you know, in my book, noble failures.
All right.
You know, you had a congressman out there that tried to investigate but didn't get too far. I mean, basically, the scientists out there threw up these smoke screens.
All right, look, would you possibly be able to get on the hard line? You must be on a cell phone?
Yes, I am, actually.
Do you have any way to get to a hard line we could call you back on?
I can try to do that. I can try to ring you back, absolutely.
All right, fine. If you would, we'd be glad to call you. Why don't you hang on? I'll ask our producer to pick this up, get the number of the hard line, and we'll call you right back. We've got about 4 minutes before we get on, okay? Because I think this information is so very important, I'll ask Don, our producer, to pick up this line on line. There we are. Fine, we'll be back in just a moment. Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago. And it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine, but those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I have to mention that we do carry Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any medical claims for you. We can only tell you that a lot of people give us the most amazing reports. We had a gentleman just this last week who's had psoriasis all of his life, and he's been struggling with it. He's tried every salve and thing imaginable, and he started to use this, and he says it's just made him so much better. One of our good friends I just talked to today had got this because he has itchy, dry skin, and she really is just so tickled with it. She really thinks it's doing a great job, and people tell us it helps their acne, or it'll help their the skin rashes they have on their face. We offer this because we think it's a great product. We use it ourselves. All we can do is suggest, why don't you try it? Some people use it for heartburn. Some people use the neutralizing solution, that is, or the neutralizing solution for their lower bowel problems. Just give it a try. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Miracle 2. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Michael Christopher Carroll. We're talking about his book, Lab 257. It's the story of a pork-shaped island off the coast of Long Island, just about 2 miles across the strait to a place called Lyme, Connecticut. And there in Lyme, Connecticut, they have the first initial outbreak of Lyme disease, which is a terrible disease, which can create chronic problems and chronic disability. And there are people out all across America that have this new disease. And they will try to tell you it's not a new disease. Well, it is a new disease. It never struck America until 1975, when the first cases were reported, and we'll simply hope that we can get Mike back again. Please keep trying to call him. I do want to have Mike, because he knows a lot more about these things than I do. But and then, of course, this disease began spreading in ticks all across America. Now, the government is doing everything they can to say, well, we didn't do this. We're not in any way responsible. But you must understand, there is a program. There really is a program to disable and reduce the population of this country. There are people who would like to get our population down to about 150 million. They say this openly, and they certainly want to get the population of the world down, to a few hundred million people, maybe a billion or 2 billion, but some people really want to get it down to about 100 million. And there are people like David Foreman, who's been quoted as saying that AIDS is a wonderful disease because it kills off so many people, and the world would be far better off if there weren't so many people out there. Could they be putting out new diseases or experimenting with them? AIDS did not exist before 1976. Chronic fatigue syndrome is an entirely new disease. Ebola is an entirely new disease. And, of course, Lyme here in the United States did not exist until the experiments were done on Plum Island. The same thing with West Nile virus in the United States was relatively unknown until recent years, and this would be about the 1990s. It existed elsewhere, but it didn't exist and certainly didn't exist in the form that it is here. And the question is, how did it get here? Well, we have these laboratories where they've been working, and, of course, this all started with the CIA back in the early 1950s, well, they wanted to recruit thousands of scientists to learn how you could begin growing animal diseases in human beings and get them to infect human beings. And they found then ways of beginning to do gene splicing and take one disease. They can take certainly a gene from a human being and put in a plant, or a gene from a plant and put it into a human being. They can do all of these things, and it all goes back to these macabre experiments that were carried out many years ago with your tax money. And what is incredible is the cover-up that has been done to prevent the American people from really knowing what was going on. And they actually put out a series of reports. Orders were given that they were all to be destroyed, just exactly as the records of MK Ultra, the CIA's mind control experiments, were to be destroyed. And fortunately, there were some people in our government who were very concerned about what was going on, and they hid those reports. And then when somebody asked for them under the Freedom of Information Act, why they actually released them, and that led to the hearings back in 1977. Everybody's so critical of Frank Church and, oh, what terrible things he did. Well, what he really did was showing what the CIA was doing to destroy people's minds in the name of science. And then, of course, the biological experiments that were done on human beings. If you've never read what we call the Rockefeller Committee report, it's actually a report out of the Veterans Administration that came out in 1994 of the signature of Senator Jay Rockefeller. I suspect he never read it, but I will tell you that I talked to the woman who made the report for this committee, the Senate committee. She was scared to death to come on to our program, but we eventually, and we never could get her to come on, but we actually were able to get copies of this report, and we now, of course, manufacture them. And I've told this story before, but I called personally the U.S. Printing Office in Washington, D.C., and talked to the man in charge of the U.S. Printing Office. This is a fairly small report. It's maybe 100 pages or so. We actually can turn them out on our own copying machine here. I asked him how many copies they'd made for the entire country. He said 35. I said, we're a country of 280 million people, and you've made 35 copies of this damning report that reveals that they've experimented on hundreds of thousands of Americans and killed people without their knowledge or consent. And he said, it's so expensive to manufacture these. We made them for the members of the committee, but 35 for the entire population. Well, we have these reports, and you need to get the Rockefeller Committee report. You will want to get this book, Lab 257. We're going to carry it because it goes into Operation Paperclip. It goes into these macabre experiments carried out by evil and wicked people. And you know, it's the most amazing thing how often all of these files just disappear and nobody can find them. They're just all empty, or they just disappear one place or another, or they're shredded, because the one thing they fear is the American people are going to find out the truth about some of the terrible, terrible things that have been happening recently. Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 gripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable, but through regular sources, call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention that we do carry the big Berkey water filters here, and we hope many of you will give serious consideration to getting them as we're moving into World War III, and you may not acknowledge that or not, but it looks like the government of Saudi Arabia is about to implode, and of course we're doing everything we can to help that, bringing all of our citizens home, for their protection. Who's behind all of the bombings over there? Well, we're told it's the wicked Osama bin Laden. Laden and the Islamic fundamentalists, but is that really the case? Well, it isn't really going to matter in the final analysis, because if the Saudis cannot maintain their society, they cannot continue producing oil if all the American technicians and engineers come home, which means we're going to have to move in and seize Saudi Arabia to protect the oil fields for the free world, to keep the Western world running and running efficiently. And so, when you move into uncertain times, you attack another Muslim nation, you antagonize the 1.25 billion people, Muslims, around the world. Some people say as many as a billion and a half Muslims throughout the world. Why, we could be in very, very difficult times, especially with our own large Muslim population here. So our plea to you is, of course, be prepared. And one of the things to do would be to get yourself a water filter, either the Big Berkey, which is $279, or the Berkey Light, which is $199. Of course, you can only get the Berkey Light here in California. You can't get the Big Berkey because of government rules and regulations. But here's a ready source of water for you. It'll certainly filter either pool or pond or river or lake water. You can get by without a lot of things, but one thing you can't get by without very well is without water. So give serious consideration to calling us at 1-800-544-8927 and order a Berkey, Big Berkey. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and it doesn't look like we're going to have Michael Carroll back again. We seem to be having some difficulty with him, so I'm going to ask if you would giving us a call here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, because the show has to go on. I'll ask the producer to be sure to be there to pick up your call, so give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like, of course, to get the report, we call it the Rockefeller Committee Report. It was put out in 1994 by the Veterans Administration, the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. Why, this is available through Radio Liberty. It's inexpensive. But you'll find that they have carried out macabre experiments on hundreds of thousands of Americans. Some of them were servicemen. Some of them were civilians. They would, of course, just release bacteria that were, of course, harmless, the drift into Los Angeles or a drift into San Francisco or in New York City. And, oh, shucks, we found out they really weren't harmless. They really were extremely toxic, and they were killing people. But, well, we certainly aren't going to compensate them, because this was done in the name of science. Well, we've got Ben actually calling us here from Salinas, I bet. Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Dr. Stan.
I have a question or comment.
My comment is this on two issues. First of all, in studying of the confined animals in different jungle populations, they were studying the DNA of different animals, and they came onto this theory, which would actually be to the delight of people that believe in the practice of eugenics. These are gene-specific viruses that can be genetically engineered to only affect a certain race of people.
Yeah, in fact, we've seen an example of that. AIDS is primarily a disease of blacks. That's why 65% of the new cases of AIDS in the United States just happen to be in black people, because this is genetically specific. That's why it's so disastrous in Africa, but they don't dare let the American people know that. The Africans, South Africans, were working on this to find diseases that would only kill blacks. The Israelis were working on diseases that would only kill Arabs, but we, of course, have come up with one of the most effective diseases to kill off a large part of the world's population, and that is AIDS. It did not exist until 1969, prior to 1969, and if anybody wants to check out what I'm about to tell you, we actually have the government reports where Dr. MacArthur testified before the House Appropriations Committee on Military Affairs and said, "You give me $10 million and we can create a disease for which there will be no immune response. And, of course, it'll take us 5 years or so to do this. The only question is, there are some people who think we should not do this type of research, create this new disease, because it would be another means of mass killing.
And, of course,
it was exactly 6 years later when the first cases of HIV occurred. They weren't recognized in 1976, and they occurred among homosexuals who'd received an experimental hepatitis B vaccine, and it was given in New York initially, and then it was given in San Francisco. And if the homosexuals were foolish enough to believe that they were doing something wise or helpful, and many of them were well motivated, of those who took the hepatitis B vaccine, the experimental vaccine in San Francisco, 75% contracted AIDS and died of it. Do you think that just happened by accident?
And from the old disease, from the new to the old, I have heard, and I've heard it confirmed more than once, that there is a body of people, medical people, that have gone and dug up the graves of people that died of bubonic plague to recultivate the disease. What is that about? Whose tax dollars are paying for that one?
That's not the bubonic plague, because we have that bacteria. No, what they did was they went out and they dug up the bodies of the people who died of the Spanish flu that was so virulent in 1918. And we're recultivating that because, after all, it's an endangered species. No, they say, we want to have this on hand in case it ever comes back again. Well, do you know a better way to get it, to come back again than to have it in a laboratory and make a mistake and to spread it all across America?
And blame it on terrorists so they could declare martial law and steal the national treasure that they haven't gotten to already. And do you know, is it true, sir, that Hitler got his idea of eugenics from one of the elder Rockefellers?
No, he got it basically from this eugenic movement, which was largely funded by the Rockefellers here in the United States. And, of course, it was Margaret Sanger, the Planned Parenthood group. They weren't around at that time, but Margaret Sanger was pushing eugenics. Do you realize that we had laws in about half of our states that would allow sterilization of people who were felt to be mentally defective, so they would not have mentally defective children? And it was out of the eugenic movement in the United States that Hitler got his ideas. And of course, you're right, this was largely funded by our good friends, the Rockefellers. In fact, the Rockefellers even funded the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Berlin, where Ernst Rudin, who of course was one of Hitler's scientists, who frequently came over and wrote in our journals here. So it was Rudolf Hess who said that Nazism is nothing other than applied science. In other words, we are going to breed the Superman, the perfect Aryan.
And all with the aid and allegiance of Prescott Bush.
Right. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Let's go to John. John, where are you calling from?
Ohio.
Okay, a question or comment?
Yes, I found it interesting. The last caller said that not only can they come up with these monstrous secret germ warfare programs that they use on us, and they've actually been using some of these against hundreds of thousands of Americans, even spraying germs into subways.
Of course, these were supposedly non-pathogenic. They were things like serratia, marsens, and I believe there's one or the other. But some of them were pathogenic, so they did not necessarily mean to kill the people. They just did it by accident.
Well, I understand, though, that they do kill the weak and the old, and they did kill somebody. But at any rate,
they did kill a couple of people, and then, of course, they did everything to cover up what they'd done, because they cannot admit to the American people they're committing these, doing these macabre things. But even more frightening to me was, of course, these new diseases that have been created in laboratories. AIDS is an entirely new disease. Chronic fatigue is an entirely new disease. Lyme disease in America is different than this disease as it exists elsewhere. And there are so many other new diseases we have never seen before.
Yes,
SARS is an entirely new disease.
I agree. I've seen some of this in the Covert Action Quarterly magazine. CovertActionQuarterly.org had some information about these gruesome experiments over the years. To me, the last caller bringing up some of the gall of the American CIA and the secret sinister agencies engaging in this, and then doing double duty after they've infected us with these things and endangered us with these things to try to use it politically to frame up any country they want to attack. And I'm also thinking of the anthrax attacks were part of this propaganda. All of the neocons in the Bush administration were trying to intimate somehow that that was the result of Iraq, which was a big lie, because even the head of the Federation of American Scientists, specialist on bioweapons, Barbara Hatcher Rosenberg, said that this could have only been produced in American labs. They were so highly refined that it was only the CIA or the U.S. military labs that could have produced this kind of fingerprint on this this thing. And this has been completely covered up now. It's just when this information about the responsibility of the United States, the hand behind it, it's been quietly been pushed aside now.
Well, I think the important thing to realize is that on the very evening of September 11th, and anybody wants to check this, we have the documentation, on the very evening of September 11th, 2001, while they, of course, while there was still burning, the World Trade Center was burning, why Dick Cheney, Vice President of the United States, and his entire staff started on Cipro. Now, Cipro is not a completely benign antibiotic because, of course, many people who take it, or a certain significant number, will rupture their Achilles tendon. It seems to attack the collagen structure. So why did they start it unless they suspected there was going to be an anthrax attack? If they expected, why didn't they report it to the government so other people could begin on that? It was just simply the vice president and perhaps the president, I don't know, but I know the vice president and his White House staff all started on Cipro that evening. And you have to ask yourself, did they have a premonition? Did they have a vision? Or did they maybe know what was going to happen?
Yes, that's very damning. And there's another fact that this has been used against another country. This has been used against Cuba. There was one of the CIA-connected Cuban-American mafia types in Miami who was arrested in New York, and he confessed to a New York judge that he had been given germs by the CIA to infect Cuba with back in the 80s.
Now, can you document that? Where is the documentation on that? I've never heard that.
CovertActionQuarterly.org, and this is actually in the court record. He was arrested for something else, and in the process of his prosecution, he admitted this as well.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised that the CIA would not do something of that sort. After all, they have used the mafia for years, and anybody who doubts that, we have a wonderful book. It's written by an authoritative source. His name is Chuck Giancana. He's the brother of Sam Giancana. The book is called Double Cross. It's an inexpensive book. And in that, they tell Chuck Giancana, who was certainly wasn't a member of the mafia, but he knew everything going on because his brother headed it. And he told how the CIA and the mafia worked very, very closely together. And the CIA would smuggle the drugs in and have the mafia distributed. And then, of course, in return, why the mafia would do favors for the CIA, like killing people,
trying to assassinate. Made 600 assassination attempts into Cuba, but they've also been doing both the CIA and the mafia massive terror attacks against Cuba, and this has been completely blacked out by the American people.
But of course, the other thing that people have forgotten is, of course, that the real problem is that we brought Fidel Castro to power, and we've kept him in on one hand, and then we keep attacking him on the other. It's all part of a game. It's like Laurel and Hardy, but people die. Hey, thanks very much for calling.
I disagree with that last sentence, because I don't think they would have been furiously trying to assassinate and terrorize and bomb and kill and strangle in Cuba if they had put him in.
You really haven't studied the history of that. Maybe I would suggest you get a book called The Fourth Floor. It's written by Earl Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba at the time. I personally interviewed him. We're going to have a man who is a Cuban exile. He'll be talking about that next day or so.
Oh, my God, please.
Okay, and of course, there is somebody who, the title of his opinion. Anyway, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, you know, it's so difficult for people to really believe that we would create the best enemies that money could buy. Let me give you a couple of examples. How was it that the Chinese communists were able to take power in China in 1948? Well, if you go and you read the McCarran Committee reports, and we have the summary of that, we'll be glad to send it out to you. And, of course, if you read many of the other books that were written at that time, they will tell you the same story. There really wasn't a revolution in China, a civil war. Well, there were two sides. There were the nationalists and the Chinese communists. But Chairman Mao, of course, got all of his weapons for the Russians. A lot of them were American weapons, but sent over. A lot were the Japanese weapons that had been actually captured in the last 5 days of the war and then turned over to the communists. And of course the Nationalist Army bought weapons from us in Okinawa and the Pacific Islands and was trying to buy weapons throughout the world, only the United States government put an arms embargo on General Chiang Kai-shek, so he couldn't get weapons anywhere in the world. Now, it's pretty hard to fight a war if you don't have any weapons. And so if you've never heard our four tape set on China, you need to get it, because you'll hear Reverend Millen, who was there, telling about how the Nationalist Army left his city several weeks before the communists arrived. There wasn't any battle to take over the city. It was simply the Nationalist Army didn't have any weapons to fight with. And of course, back here in the United States, people were upset after a while. We'd fought the Second World War, for freedom and for democracy, and we'd already turned Eastern Europe over to the communists, and now, of course, it appeared we were turning China over to the communists. And so Congress appropriated $125 million, which today would be probably $12-15 billion in weapons for the Nationalist Army. And they got all the ammunition and the rifles together, and they put them on boats. And then the State Department, the U.S. State Department, which was under the control of the Council on Foreign Relations in 1947 and 46 and 1948, held those ships in port for a year and a half to 2 years, wouldn't let them sail. And, of course, here in the United States, the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation were running articles saying, or at least their front organizations were running articles saying, why, Chairman Mao is not a communist. He's an agrarian reformer. Why, he's the George Washington of China. He's the Abraham Lincoln of China. He's going to free the people. And a massive propaganda campaign here at home to confuse the American people about what really was going on. And so then, of course, after 2 years, when the Nationalist Army, most of it had already retreated to Formosa, we call it Taiwan today, when those ships finally arrived, in the ports in China, and they broke open the crates of rifles, they didn't have any bolts in them, and they couldn't be used. We brought communism to China. We did the same thing in Cuba. Fidel Castro never won the revolution. Now you can go back and we can read a number of books. I've suggested the book Dagger in the Heart. I've suggested the book The Fourth Floor by Ambassador Smith, who I had the opportunity to interview. And both of them will tell you Fidel Castro didn't win the revolution. We turned Cuba over to him. We created the best enemy money could buy. And we keep, of course, attacking that enemy to give this myth. It's sort of like Laurel and Hardy or Lewis, Martin and Lewis, or Amos and Andy, or Abbott and Costello, and it's great staged, and an awful lot of people die, but we're not trying to get rid of Fidel Castro. When Fidel Castro came to the United States to talk to the United Nations, he stopped off to see David Rockefeller. Now, why would this wicked communist stop off to see David Rockefeller, the wicked capitalist, the leader of the capitalist world? Unless you understand this is all showbiz, and you need to understand that most of what you think really isn't true. And we're going to have a gentleman, a Cuban refugee, as our guest here, I guess some evening this week, or perhaps it'll be next week. And we want you to hear what he has to say. In fact, we'll be doing a program with the same refugee on Saturday on KSCO, at least part of the program I will do. That's the noon program on KSCO here in the Monterey Bay area at 1080. And we'll be talking with this gentleman who's very knowledgeable about what happened in Cuba at the time. And, of course, the communists will all tell you, oh, my goodness, Fidel must be good because he's being attacked by the CIA. If you think for 1 minute the CIA couldn't have gotten rid of him at any time, you're sadly mistaken. When he came to the United States, they could have taken him out. They've never really tried to take him out. But we have created the best enemy that money could buy. And this is the great tragedy. We create enemies, and then, of course, we always can rally the people behind the government. Exactly as we started funding communism back in 1918. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to go to the original source material of how the Russian Revolution came about and how it was funded primarily by money from the West and primarily from money from the United States. Study the Hoover Commission and how 97% of the supplies we gave to Russia in 1918 didn't go to the anti-communists. They went to the communists. Why would we do such a thing when the communists were talking about destroying the West? A lot of unanswered questions out there. And the great tragedy is most people have no idea about history.
Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me suggest that if you have children or grandchildren, you really need to get a Phonopoly set so they can learn how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. A wonderful, wonderful means of getting the information to your children or to your grandchildren. It's played like a Monopoly. It's a fun game to play. But in the process, you and your children are going to learn how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. Most of the programs, $300, $400, $500, $600 for something that'll teach phonics. This is $139.95. It works great, and we certainly recommend it to you. And then, of course, we want to also suggest you need to get some of our four-tape sets. We have a wonderful four-tape set called The Secret Government. We have another four-tape set called Secret Societies, and of course in our four-tape set on The Secret Government, you'll hear Bill Clinton's mentor, Professor Carol Quigley, talking about the fact he'd written a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, going into the background of this secret society that controlled England and eventually came to America, and why somebody came and bought up the publisher, his Macmillan Company, and then destroyed the plates to the first half of his book and lied to him for years. We found this tape in Professor Quigley's papers and bought the rights to use it from Professor Quigley's widow, one of the best things we ever did, because this is historical. You'll actually hear Professor Quigley, a brilliant college professor, a liberal who hated people like you and I, because we're just such common folks, but he talks about the emblem on the back of the dollar bill and how it's been around for 6,000 years, and he's absolutely right. It's the emblem of the mystery religions of the secret society. So what's it doing on the back of the dollar bill? Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for the Secret Government four tape set or Secret Societies or both of them. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I'm going to tell my producer that unfortunately we are all out of time, and if people want to stay on the line, I'd be glad to talk to them afterwards. But right now, certainly, we want to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our program to help us. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or you can just subscribe to our newsletter. But if you'd like to, we'd love to have your support, because it's an expensive proposition to do what we do 5 hours every day. Then I would simply suggest that if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our basic theme of our ministry is that there really is organized evil out there. There really are people who are demonically possessed. The story of the Bible is absolutely true. And we hope many of you will want to get the new video we're carrying. They sold their souls for rock and roll. It's a 4-hour video of tremendous information in it. And you'll actually hear some of the pop singers talking about how they've sold their souls to the devil. They're deadly serious. and most of them are already dead and gone to their just rewards. And you'll hear Marilyn Manson singing about Mr. Crowley and Ozzy Osbourne singing about Mr. Crowley. And, of course, the entire pop culture is all Crowleyism. Mr. Crowley was a Satanist. You need to get our four-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends. He was a Satanist. He worshipped Satan. He was involved in human sacrifice. And ladies and gentlemen, there is organized evil in the world, and one of the things Lucifer loves is wars, so he can claim as many souls as possible for his kingdom. And our job is to reach as many people as we can for the other side, for the side of righteousness. So if you're out there across America and you would like to get our material, and specifically, they sold their souls for rock and roll or four tapes out of Mr. Crowley, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to know more about Operation Paperclip, how we brought the Nazi scientists to America, why, of course, the book is Medusa File. Another book that covers this in part is Operation Bluebird, goes into the CIA mind control. Now, we will, of course, be carrying, if you'd like, to get the lab 257. You can order that to us. I think it's an important book. A lot of great information here on the background of some of the macabre experiments that have been done and the government cover-up of this. And there really is a government cover-up, the fact that we are doing these experiments and creating these new diseases that endanger every one of you. And nobody wants to talk about, where did Ebola come from? Where did AIDS come from? Where did chronic fatigue syndrome come from that infects a million people in America today? And, of course, where did so many of the other diseases that we have come from? Why is Lyme disease so prevalent all across America? And why did it start just 2 miles away from Plum Island? The book, if you'd like to get it, Lab 257, get all of these items by giving us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We do hope that many of you go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, pull down our programs. You can listen to our programs there 5 hours every day on the Internet. You can listen to us 4 hours a day on shortwave. You can listen to our archive programs. And we want you to get educated so you can help us educate others. And you just have to talk to people about what's going on. Ask them how they're going to feel if our economy after November 1st of next year goes into a downward tailspin. How would they feel if their pension was wiped out simply by the destruction of the value of the American dollar? What protection do they have for themselves and their family? Get them thinking, get them listening, and hopefully they'll begin to convince others. Pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, and please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. Thank you.